Now, if you have been living under a rock, you might not have noticed, but there is a federal election campaign on at the moment. That's right, breaking news for you here on 2SER. But we are 4 weeks in, so that means we've got 4 weeks to go. But the latest news poll has found Labor and Coalition are tied on 50-50, two-party preferred. However, micro-parties and independents have also gained popularity, while votes for the Coalition, Labor and the Greens have come down 1 point. We're finding something like 15% of Australians are thinking of going to the polls and voting for an independent or a micro-party. Joining us on the line to debunk what on earth is going on and perhaps try and shed some light is our resident election nerd here at 2SER from the University of Sydney, Dr. Peter Chen. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
So a lot of us apparently are looking at voting independent or for a micro party on July the 2nd. Why?
Well, this has been a growing trend over the last few decades, and I think it relates to a number of factors. The first one is that the two major parties were once more ideologically distant from each other, and so as they've moved to enter and occupy the centre ground, it's created a space on the edges of politics for alternative parties. A number of people who traditionally might have voted for those parties when they were more distinct, I think, are interested in something different. And I think there are a rise of some competitive minor parties, particularly in this campaign. And so, for example, last week we saw the Nick Xenophon team outpolling in terms of primary votes, the ALP in South Australia. And so within the various states, there are a few smaller parties that look competitive and they're pushing up the numbers a little bit. So next in South Australia, we hear that Pauline Hanson might be in with a running to come to the Senate in Queensland. And a few factors like that, I think, are going on and driving up those numbers a little bit. But it's part of a longer-term trend.
So basically, you reckon that the two major parties are kind of coming closer together, as it were, on a policy basis. So these votes, perhaps, I guess, on the fringe, you know, specific issues, is that where these independents and micro-parties are gaining these votes from?
Well, some of them are on either end of the political spectrum, but also some of them are minor parties that are dealing with particular ideological positions or issues. And some of them are responding to local conditions. So I think it's quite a kind of diverse group. So you have people, you know, in South Australia who are extremely concerned about, in a sense, the parlous state of the economy in South Australia. They haven't, you know, got a lot out of the major parties, they feel, for many, many decades. Mm. So they're interested in the kind of local celebrity candidate there. And in other cases, you know, it's going to be about specific issues or specific ideologies. And the Liberal Democrats who you know, rose to a bit of prominence when they elected David Lionhelm in the last election, obviously represent a kind of emerging ideological group in Australian society. That's libertarianism. Mm. Libertarianism didn't kind of traditionally have much of a representation in Australia. So they're a kind of new and emerging group, and they're obviously gaining a kind of a small but reasonable across-the-board percentage across a variety of libertarian political parties.
Mm. I suppose I was saying to one of the, to Lula from the newsroom this morning that, you know, this rise in independence, I reckon a lot of it does come down to kind of disenchantment with those two major parties. Do you reckon that plays into it?
Oh, I think that's part of it. I mean, clearly if the major parties were providing things that these electors were interested in, they'd retain greater proportion of their vote. And certainly over the last couple of decades, the number of people who report changing their vote throughout their life has increased. So once upon a time, people were much more tribal in their voting habits and much more predictable, and that's changed. I guess it makes elections more competitive. I don't think it's a bad thing, but any stretch of the imagination. And some of these characters add, you know, some colour to what is a quite bland election campaign, and others, you know, introduce new ideas. And so if we take Nick Xenophon, for example, I mean, he's really pushed the issue of the regulation of gambling into the political spotlight in a way I don't think it would be, particularly running counter to the kind of money politics that's associated with that policy area. Mm. So, you know, these guys, I think, are actually kind of beneficial, even if they're not directly elected themselves. They put issues on the agenda. The Bullet Train for Australia Party is a good example of that. You know, some of these issues obviously have popular appeal.
Now, if we cast our mind back, Peter, to 2010, we had that infamous hung parliament, and it seemed like no one was happy. You know, talkback radio went an absolute meltdown about how it was a disgrace and nothing was getting done. Why is it, if we're so disenchanted with hung parliaments, that we are seeing a rise in, you know, parties which could lead to another hung parliament?
I don't know if that's right, actually. I mean, the Australians may not be used to hung parliaments, but the hung parliament was actually quite a productive period of time. A lot of legislation was passed. The government had to negotiate with smaller political parties to get their legislation through. There was a lot of policy discussion at the time. I think you'll find that, I mean, if people could sort of take all the heat and the light out of those arguments, that hung parliaments are actually really good for democracy. They force the Australian Parliament, which was an incredibly parlour political institution. It's not a dynamic institution by any stretch of the imagination. They force it to do much more work than normal, particularly in a policy sense. They force ideas to be really debated and the position of different actors to come out. So I think the 2010 Parliament was done a significant kind of disservice in that way. And frankly, I think that Australians probably have to get used to much more ambiguous electoral outcomes. It's not unusual around the world. So in many cases where, you know, they have a much more robust multi-party system, we have a kind of two-party system in Australia, elections don't give definitive outcomes. They start a process by which major and minor parties have to negotiate coalitions. And that's a kind of quite normal practice around the world, which people expect. So I think it's just a question of expectation. But as Australians are appearing to be increasingly disenchanted with the two major parties, things like hung elections or needing to negotiate the balance of power with independent or minor party senators is going to be increasingly the norm. And I think, particularly with regards to the Senate, that's not an unusual situation. Australians do split their vote in the lower house and the upper house, so they don't actually mind, I think. So I think a lot of that kind of noise that we heard about the hung parliament being such a bad thing, I think that was actually more of the kind of bloviators in the talkback radio space than really reflected actually kind of an actual political problem.
Yeah, fair enough. So I do find the great irony, Peter, in the sense that this double dissolution election was called to clear out the rowdy Senate, as it were, the unruly Senate for Malcolm Turnbull, and it looks like he's going to have more headaches than he did to start with. I mean, you're looking at perhaps Pauline Hanson getting in there, looking at a few Nick Xenophon team senators in there. It's going to be a really interesting Senate, won't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think... there are a lot of uncertainties about the Senate. You know, there was a lot kind of ink spilled about the changes to the Senate would definitely mean that, you know, the coalition would always control the Senate, or would definitely mean that the Greens would control the Senate. I think it's kind of uncertain, and it's going to play out over a number of electoral cycles, actually, to see what the kind of new equilibrium of the Senate is going to look like. But the way things are going right now, particularly with a double dissolution where the quota for a Senate spot is well below 10%, and we see those minor parties polling about 15%, that means that depending on how the actual voting plays out, and there's a great deal of uncertainty about that, you know, theoretically you could see two minor or micro party senators holding seats, you know, all over the place. And that could be quite a big force of a wide and an unusual collection of individuals in many ways.
Peter, I've been asking this question to all my political guests for the last few weeks. In one word, who is going to win this federal election?
Advertisers.
Oh, well done. But no, honestly, who do you think's got, who's got the edge?
Oh, I think it's too close to say. I think probably the coalition is likely just on statistical and historical basis to win, but because it is such a close election campaign, I think it's actually up in the air.
Excellent. Well, Peter, thank you so much for your time.